You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
This week's bits. The best news nuggets from Breakfast and The Wire from this week.
Atamaria, ko Hanaros toka wingua, and welcome to this week's bits. This week, a lot went on with Green Party co-leader, or should I say former co-leader, Matiria Ture. Firstly, on Monday, we looked at what was following on from last week. Matiria was still under fire for both lying to Work and Income while she was on the domestic benefit and changing her address to be in a different electorate. Joel Thomas spoke to her on Monday discussing the situation amidst these scandals. Her decision to step down from any ministerial roles if the Labour-Green coalition is elected, and the disappointment Ture felt towards the lack of support she's received from the Labour Party, who are in coalition with them.
Jacinda Ardern has not condoned your admission, and she did call for you to step down from ministerial roles. This seems to not be a very empathetic approach from someone who claims to be fighting systemic struggles faced by New Zealanders. Do you think that maybe Labour Party is not as progressive and supportive of changing systemic injustices as they let on?
Jacinda's entitled to her view, and so is the party and their party, and I understand where they're coming from. I think it is true that the Greens have been the only political party to stand up for those who are the most denigrated, the most discriminated against. And what we've seen with what has been an incredibly intrusive investigation into my life is that this is what happens to beneficiaries all the time. Every dollar that they spend is questioned, every minute that they do anything is questioned, all of their relationships are questioned, they are questioned as to whether or not they're valuable human beings and whether they're good people because they're poor. This is what you're seeing happening to me is what happens to them every day, because we still have a system that treats poor people like they are inherent failures, like there's something wrong with them.
So
the Greens, what we've done at some cost, what we've done is expose that, and we've exposed it across institutions and across the media and across other political parties too, I think, not necessarily Labour, but certainly others, who have a much less compassionate approach to those who are poor. And we're asking New Zealanders to reject that cruelty, to promote and support compassion when it comes to poor people, because what we're seeing as a result are people literally dying on Auckland streets from cold.
Well, Labour is part of your coalition. You guys are inherently tied together politically. Wouldn't it be perhaps nicer for the Green Party if that they were more supportive of giving amnesty to people who've committed beneficiary fraud, rather than saying, and I quote, you can't condone law-breaking, and ignoring the systemic issues that are at play and punishing them decades later, like we've seen with you?
I would like that. I would really like that. But I'm not going to get everything I want. What I know for sure is that the stronger the Green Party is in a Labour-Greens government, the more of our policy we will get through, and the stronger we will be to make sure that things change. And so this is why I'm saying the party vote for the Greens is the only vote that's going to get that truly progressive change, because we're the only ones prepared to literally almost put our lives on the line for it. And that is a choice that voters will have. If they want a truly compassionate government that takes care of people when they are in need, then give your party vote to the Greens so we can make that happen in a government with Labour. We're all in with this. This has been one of the most difficult but one of the most important political conversations this country has ever had, as to how it is that we treat people who are in need. And we can do better. I know we can. And I know we all want to.
Then, on Monday evening, Green MPs Kennedy Graham and David Clendon threatened to quit the Green Party in protest over Matiria's refusal to step down. They said her position was untenable. BFM's India Asar spoke with former Green MP Sue Bradford about the two rogue MPs that rebelled since Green co-leader Matiria Ture made her admission that she lied to Work and Income, and where the Green Party goes from here.
What did you think of Matidia's admission to benefit for? Do you think that was worth the political risk?
It's a bit hard to say at the moment. I mean, I think that she probably didn't realise quite how the predicament that she would put herself in personally. But at the same time, it was a very brave stand and helped has helped the Greens enormously in terms of the credibility of the welfare policy that she was putting forward, and the fact that they have a one of their leaders who is prepared to talk openly about her experience of life on the benefit. And that's meant an awful amount to many people who are struggling right now at working income or have had a really tough time with them in the past. You totally understand where Matidia is coming from. And I think at this stage, it's been great to see James Shaw, other Green MPs and other Green Party leaders coming out and saying, no, we're backing our leader and we're not going to bend to the pressure that Kennedy and Dave Clendon are putting on them.
Yeah, so what do you make of these two MPs resigning and the approach that they took to this resignation?
Well, it's unprecedented in the Green Party to have MPs resigning like this at very short notice without going through party processes, totally trying to hold the caucus and party to ransom. I can see why the caucus is and the leadership is so alarmed by their actions. Usually tensions within the Green Party have not become open in this way before. It's really unusual. And marks a big shift in the how people are going to perceive the Green Party, because of course, like any other political party, there always have been internal dissent, internal, I don't know, civil wars, internal factions. It's just never really revealed itself very much before, and this is the first time it's happened. But at this stage, I'd just say good on the caucus and the leadership for holding strong and backing Matidia in the difficult position she's ended up in as a result of supporting really good welfare policy.
Yeah, so do you think James Shaw is making the right call to suspend them?
Absolutely. I mean, I don't think the Greens have any choice. Either they cave to these two or they carry on and hold the integrity of their caucus and party. And so far, all the evidence is that they're going to hang tight and stick with the honourable road. I mean, it sounds like David and Kennedy have bowed to pressure from the right, from other political parties, from the commentariat, from all the outraged right-wing voters who always like to think that, beneficiaries, you can smash onto beneficiaries, but if it's tax fraud or something like that, that's fine. So I think it's really great the Greens have been making a stand on this.
So looking ahead, how do you think this controversy will affect the party and their perception by the public heading into the election?
If the Greens stay strong with Matidia and their welfare policy, I think that the Greens will continue to catch votes from beneficiaries and people on the left that they wouldn't have had a hope of catching just a few weeks ago.
The Greens were then described by a number of political commentators as being in a state of chaos after the two MPs resigned in protest of Matidia Tude. The Tude debate has divided many voters, with some loyally standing behind Tude and others saying they will no longer be voting for the Greens. However, as a conversation about the Green Party crisis and Matidia Tude's fraud distracted from the actual conversation around some of the broader systematic issues with how beneficiaries are looked at and treated within New Zealand. Ximena spoke with Canterbury University's Bronwyn Hayward about this.
It's a very serious situation for them. They've had a very public split over the deep moral questions, both about paying and whether and your role as a leader, and also these questions around electoral fraud. And the trouble is that that's got in the way of the bigger message that the Greens were trying to talk about, because they are actually trying to talk about an issue that is really important, which is the issue around the Ministry for Social Development being the most aggressive of the prosecuting agencies in New Zealand at the moment after corrections. And that has a particular effect for women and for Māori, because what we're seeing in the last 3 to 5 years is a significant rise in prosecutions for very minor offences under MSD. They will chase you down for $1,000, whereas ACC doesn't start until $20,000 for a fine, and also you are three times more likely to be arrested and sent to jail for a fraud offence under as a beneficiary than you are if you're a tax evader, and there's a huge financial difference in the amounts of money involved. So they're talking about very serious issues around fairness or wanting to talk about fairness of our justice system, but instead it's become this debate about Materia and was she really poor and did she really do the right thing, and it's become very personalised, and that is difficult for them.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, I think that's kind of almost the, interestingly, the result of this dialogue has been this real divide in people's perspectives on the subject. So people are either really supportive of her in the party, but others are blaming the situation for putting them off from voting for the Greens entirely. And so do you think that the media condemning Materia as a leader has kind of created this divide in voter discussions around the subject?
Not so much the media. I think the issue is very divided. We know whenever we talk about fairness and money that people really harden up, and we also know that public attitudes to beneficiaries are really different to their attitudes to white-collar crime. And so the real issue is that we have been incredibly harsh in punishing poor Māori women compared to white-collar crime. And in a way, that's one of the problems. But there's a second really interesting, troubling issue, which is after the murder of Jo Cox in Britain, there's been a lot of soul-searching by the media and public figures about how we talk about women's leadership. And I was also just starting to get anxious about the way in which we are so casual in our vitriol against women leaders at the moment. You know, everyone is starting to use this this sort of language of hyperbole. You know, she's ripping off the benefit system. Actually, come on. You know, she was a student at 23. I don't condone it. I think it was really stupid. I don't think it's an analogy that's really perfect for the kind of cases she's trying to present. But it does reflect about us, and I think then families are starting to think about themselves, and this is where it becomes very divided. And I'm not sure about you, but lots of people I know are on really polar extremes of the debate in how they feel about this. And somehow we've got to have a more grown-up conversation about our values and the way in which our legal system is driving people into a situation where they are trapped in poverty. And I think if the Greens could bring that debate round, that will really work for them. But right now, I think all they can do is just circle the wagons and hold into the position that they're in and hope that some of this blows over.
She then also spoke to Victoria University's Claire Timperley to find out more.
Well, it just seems to me that a lot of the conversation that we've been having has been either focused on kind of the politics of what's happening in the Green Party or kind of the leadership challenges, but that something that had been missing from the conversation had been the very issue itself of beneficiary fraud and what that reveals to us about our welfare state and our welfare system, but also kind of the questions of class that emerge from those particular issues.
Mm. So do you believe there's a double standard with the way in which Ture has been treated?
Well, I'm not sure that I'd want to get into that too much. My main point that I was trying to make in the article is that the experiences that Ture has faced in her life are not experiences that many of our MPs have had to face, and that our politics would be much more representative if we had more MPs with experiences like this.
Mm, right. But I mean, I guess because, you know, with both the benefit fraud admission as well as the electoral fraud admission, I think a lot of these things, I mean, as you mentioned in the article, you know, if we looked back at every single MP, surely some of them would also have committed such things as electoral fraud. But that hasn't been done, and that's not going to be done. It's kind of, she's been put to such a high level of scrutiny that seems to distract from the main purpose of the revelation in the first place, it seems.
Well, yeah, and it's sort of part of the point she was trying to make when she first announced that she had committed benefit fraud, was that beneficiaries face a higher level of scrutiny than the average New Zealand citizen, and to some degree it seems that this has sort of played out in the kind of ongoing saga, and that she, as a result of this admission of beneficiary fraud, has been the subject of greater scrutiny in terms of other past transgressions, including electoral fraud. So I haven't looked in any detail myself at whether other MPs may have participated in electoral fraud, but given that we know that, for example, many students will move to a place other than where their parents live in order to study at university, and many of them don't change their addresses when an election comes round. And in many cases, that might just be because it's particularly inconvenient or difficult to do so. But for some of them, they may also say, well, you know, in the case of Victoria University, I've moved to Wellington. I live in Wellington Central. When I cast my electorate vote, it is very likely that a left-wing candidate is going to win. Therefore, maybe I should still cast my vote where my parents live, where maybe there is more of a swing vote, that my vote might make more of a difference in that situation. So I think that there are lots of reasons to kind of have... I'm not saying that you should ignore the fact that there is electoral fraud happening, but the fact that this has been raised as something that is particularly troubling for today, when we haven't looked at other MPs to see whether or not this is an issue for any other MPs, I think this is all connected to the class issue in particular.
Yeah, I think that's pretty much, you know, that's the crux of this whole thing, and that so much of the discussion has just been swept away into this whole area of Greens being in crisis / Matilda Turei not fit for the job, when actually she's almost more fit for the job in a way.
I mean, it's quite nuanced insofar as she's not resigned from Parliament. She has just said that she wouldn't hold a ministerial position if the Greens were able to get into government. But even then, I think that is sort of problematic to say, well, we would allow you to be in the legislature, but we know that being in the legislature is a very different kind of power than having a ministerial position and being able to actually shape policy in a much more complete and comprehensive way. So it's particularly difficult in a way, because there is that kind of nuance to being in government versus being in the legislature, and the different kind of role that a minister plays to and a general MP.
Then everything went downhill as Matilda Turei announced her resignation from the Green Party on Wednesday night, saying her family was facing too much scrutiny.
Matilda Turei has decided to withdraw as co-leader of the Green Party of Aotearoa New Zealand. She will withdraw from our list of candidates and will retire at the election. The Green Party thanks you.
There's two reasons. The first is that the scrutiny of my family has become unbearable, frankly. They don't deserve the degree of scrutiny that they've suffered from, and I have a duty to them to protect them from that. That is my first duty, and always has been. The second reason is I do think that if I continue as co-leader, I will hinder the success of the kaupapa. And the kaupapa is to change this government and make sure the Greens are at the very heart of that new government. That is what I've been working for 15 years for as a Member of Parliament for the Greens. I will do anything that's necessary to bring that about. And I think that it's time for me to step aside, because I'm hindering that process.
Political commentator Jennifer Curtin then spoke to Breakfast host Mikey Havoc about Matilda's resignation and the poll results.
Did it happen because of the poll results?
I think they came out last night, so they would have known, I think, internally that amongst some of their base, there was complete confidence that Matilda should stay on, but clearly there were others that were feeling a little less comfortable with the idea, and really there's been a lot of noise around this, and they don't have the same resources to do the kind of polling that Labor and National can do inside their party, and so in the end the potential of the poll, I wouldn't know if they knew about the poll before she made that call.
They did.
But I think they would have had a sense that perhaps they could drop.
Was this week's Bits. To listen to the full interviews, visit 95bfm.com and check out the BCasts.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.